Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR. Everybody, welcome to episode 126 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rob Yeltaka. Thanks for joining me again today on the podcast. We have a mega action-packed episode. We've had a few of those lately because so much is going on for gun owners. But yeah, this is one of those episodes. So I'm not even going to introduce the stuff we're going to talk about because there's too much to do it. Anyway, I will be bringing on Tracy as usual, and I've got a couple of things to cover with you before we get there. But before we get started, I want to talk about some of the businesses in our community that are supporting the CCFR Radio Podcast and making it possible. Vortex, the force of optics. We'd like to thank our friends over at Vortex Canada for continuing to support the podcast. You can find all their excellent products over at vortexcanada.net. That's vortexcanada.net. And also our great friends over at the Saskatchewan Rivers Chapter of Safari Club International. They do a ton of great work over there, including supporting, you guessed it, the CCFR. So make sure you check them out at saskriversseci.com. That's saskriversseci.com. Of course, do not forget our friends over at CTOMS. As you may be aware, CTOMS Academy provides life-saving training in trauma care and human performance, perfect for outdoor enthusiasts, hunters, shooters. You can check out all their great stuff over at ctomsinc.com. That's ctomsinc.com. And if you're in the market for firearms, ammunition, cold weather gear, airsoft even, you name it, you'll find it all through our friends at North Pro Sports. So you can check them out at northprosports.com. That's northprosports.com. All right, we're back. So the first thing I want to talk to you about is a bit of an announcement. It's kind of breaking news, big announcement happening. Now, as you know, if you followed us for a while, you know I don't like to talk about things before the ink is dry on agreements or all the suppliers are already on board or we produce the product that we're going to distribute or whatever. And the reason for that is I don't like to backpedal on something I say that we're going to do. I guess in business and in life, sometimes it's just it happens for reasons outside your control and just you have to, but I'd like to do that zero times, right? So zero. But anyway, I'm going to take the risk. I've done it a couple of times, but I'm going to take the risk because the CCFR has a verbal agreement with the folks over at Wild TV to begin producing and airing CCFR radio on the air again. Now, if you notice, I didn't say there's a new season coming. So I'm going to give you the backstory as quickly as I possibly can to respect the time that you've chosen to spend with us. So, as you know, the way that it did work on Wild TV was like a regular television show. In TV, in linear television, you can do 13 or 26 weeks of your show. And what they'll do is they'll take that, if it's 13 weeks, they'll repeat that, they'll repeat the show four times if they want to run it for a year or twice if they want to run it for two quarters for 6 months. If you do 26 weeks, they'll run the show and then they'll run reruns for the second half of the year. Well, our show is more of like a news broadcast, so it's very time relevant. So, you know, it's not going to make any sense to anyone watching a show 4 months later after it was originally aired. And they're like, I know this, all this stuff happened 4 months ago, right? So it just doesn't make sense. So that format doesn't work in linear TV kind of in that footprint, in that kind of format, I should say. So anyway, the backstory to how this new way that we're going to work with Wild TV came from once I did those 13 weeks, and it was a tremendous amount of work and almost killed me. I did those 13 weeks, and then towards the end, Wild TV and the CCFR agreed, like, well, news is still, you know, a lot of things are still happening for gun owners, and they still need to be informed. It's just, again, it's just not like a regular show. What we'll do is we'll do a monthly update show. And so we've been doing that. And the monthly update show was a lot less work for me because I do the whole show by myself, was a lot less work for me than the regular episode. I'll tell you why really quick. Because in those episodes, I would have to come up with the idea for a guest myself. I would have to wrangle that guest, find out if, you know, I had a few people who are like, it's not a good time for us or whatever. I have to get that guest. I had to conduct the online interview. Then I had to do all of my monologues and whatnot. And for somebody like me, who's naturally not so great at, I'm not a broadcaster by nature kind of thing, right? You know, talking without saying, or thinking or stopping or whatever. You can get away with that in online content, but that's not, television is far less forgiving, I think is what I'm trying to say. So it would take me dozens of takes to do a 4-minute, 5-minute monologue, right? Because I can't be just wandering around with stuff. And I can't read it. And I can't use a teleprompter because I'd have to still type it and it's too much work. And so anyway, all those to say, those episodes were a lot of work. So I do all that stuff. I'd edit it. I'd color correct. I'd correct all the audio. I'd render it. I'd send it to WOW TV. They would insert the bumpers, output it into a format for linear television, put the commercials in and air it. So it was a lot on me and it was every single week. So anyway, these monthly update shows weren't that much work because I did them at the same time I did the podcast, every second podcast. And then it would only be me and Tracy for 2 segments and I only had 1 monologue to do and then a closing. So it was like, oh, these are easy. So anyway, when I was preparing to do this podcast, I had to do an update show for September for WOW TV. And I'm thinking, it's like, I do these, the podcast and the show, in one really long day. I'm like, why can't I just do that every 2 weeks and do the show forever? Like every 2 weeks forever on WOW TV if they're interested. So I reached out and they're like, absolutely, we'll do that. So how it's going to be, it's going to be a like an update show. So Tracy and I for 2 segments and then the monologue in the beginning and the closing. And then every second show, I'll have a guest for 1 segment, Tracy for 1 segment and the monologue and the closing. So it'll be like the old show. So I only really got to wrangle 1 guest a month. So 12 guests a year instead of 1 guest a week, meaning 13 or 26 guests a year. So that's brought the show to a point where it's doable for me. And the reason why I thought that was valuable too is Tracy and I were at TACCOM. A lot of people rolled up and said, oh, I love the TV show. And I'm like, oh, did you see it? Right? Because it's hard for me to get feedback on that, right? I don't have metrics like I do with online content. And they're like, yeah, absolutely. That's how I found out about you guys. I'm like, well, that's useful. And we also have to keep reaching out to within our community, because it's funny, and you've probably heard me say this before, people are like, well, you're preaching to the converted. And it's like, oh no, there's only about 70, 80, maybe 90,000 gun owners that are politically active enough that they'll go volunteer for an MP's campaign, or they'll be 100% sure votes in an election, or they'll volunteer for the CCFR or whatever. They'll show up at a march. It's a small number. We have a lot of work to do in our own community with people understanding that they need to play an active role if you want your children to have guns. You know, if you want the next generation to have that freedom to own a firearm in Canada, really important. So anyways, so people were coming up and said they saw the show. And so during this conversation I had with WOW TV, they're like, oh, your show's really popular. And I'm like, well, I don't know that. It's nice of you to say, right? You know, like, I don't know, right? Because people are motivated in all kinds of different ways. And I said, well, you know, and they said, your show is highly rated. And I said, oh, do you have ratings? And they're like, yeah, CCFR Radio on the Air was in the top 10 the whole time of all shows on WOW TV. And I said, well, there's a lot of shows on WOW TV, right? Like in total. And they're like, yeah, there's a lot of shows. There are tons of shows. And I'm like, all right, well, let's do this. And they're like, absolutely. So thanks to the people over at WOW TV for helping us make this happen. And I think as long as I, you know, in my mind, I think if I either do a couple of reruns or I make some shows that aren't time sensitive, maybe 3 times during the year, that'll allow me to, if I'm really overtasked, to kind of sidestep that episode, run this instead kind of thing. And other than that, it shouldn't be an overwhelming amount of work, and I'll be able to keep it up all the time. So yeah, big news. Pretty cool. Next thing I want to talk about is Springfield Sports Club in Fredericton, New Brunswick, recently received a decision in a lawsuit they were involved in from the Court of Appeal. And basically they won against the CFO's office in New Brunswick. So the CFO, the backstory there, and this is in the simplest of simple terms, Ian Runkle did a video on his channel, Runkle of the Bailey. So you can find that on YouTube and you can check out the Springfield Sports Club case. And he goes through it in a lot more detail. But basically, again, just the short strokes of it. This is a gun club who went to renew their gun club operating license. And the CFO is like, yeah, no problem. We'll approve you. And here's 26 new things I want you to do. New conditions on your license. And they're like, what do you mean? We've been operating forever here and we haven't had a problem. They're like, but you know, I heard somebody else was doing these things, so we're going to do them too, without any evidence that these things needed to be done. Interesting, right? So when you let the government, when you allow the government to overreach people, human beings in the government, in the bureaucracy, will consistently overreach and try to grab more power for themselves and apply that to the people that they're governing, right? Inappropriately. And that's why you have to fight back against these things when they happen. So congratulations to the Springfield Sports Club for sticking with it, and you won your case. And that is awesome. It may go to the Supreme Court, but that it's highly unlikely that it will, but there's a possibility of that. So this could be over. And it was just a really great example of people saying, you know what, enough is enough. We're pushing back. So all the power to you. Next thing I want to talk about is there are some rumors floating around that the Liberals are going to call an election sometime soon. And some people think within weeks. Now, that sounds ludicrous because we've had two elections in the span of like 2.5 years, right? And the last one was a year ago. And while some people think it's inconceivable that the Liberals would call an election, you know, it's within the realm of possibility. And I thought I'd just discuss this for a minute with you real quick, just to kind of throw it out there. Now, it is almost unthinkable that they would do that. But some of the reasons they may consider doing that is that there's a new leader of the Conservative Party of Canada. He's extremely popular for a variety of different reasons. We're going to get into a little bit of that, like real analysis of that, when Tracy comes on. But as far as the perspective from the Liberals are not a popular government. They haven't been since they, you know, ended their majority government. And they've just been squeaking by by the skin of their teeth. They need Jagmeet Singh to give them, you know, the golden handshake every time they want to do something, right? So Jagmeet Singh is holding Trudeau's leash and vice versa. They have some unholy alliance there, right? So anyway, the Liberals may think, well, you know what, let's call an election now because Pierre Poilievre, the new leader, is the biggest threat out there to them, to their government. And they may say, well, we'd rather fight Poilievre now before Canadians get to know him and know that the mainstream media has painted him completely unfairly, and that he is a trustworthy individual, and that he does have the best interests of the country at heart, and that he actually can change things, right? So they don't want Canadians getting a chance to know Pierre Poilievre. They'd rather fight him now when he's weak rather than a year or two down the line when everyone sees exactly, you know, what his plan is and sees him as a good leader of the opposition. So there's some compelling things, plus there's some other factors. We don't need to get into those details. But just know that whether or not there's an election coming, nobody knows. Not even the Liberals know that. Decisions like that are made within a week or two. They might be like, okay, we're doing okay in the polls. We got this issue coming up, whatever. All right, you know what? Let's just do it. Or they'll be like, now's not the time, even if they plan to, even if they said they should the next couple of weeks. So nobody really knows, I think is important to know, but it could happen. As a result, the CCFR started our election project to beat even our last election project. We launched that a week ago. So I already retasked a few people to do some things and to get some things ready. And if you remember in the last election, we distributed 230,000 of these things, right? This brochure that says Meet Your Liberal Team on the front, picture of Justin, really great. He's thinking about, you know, all the good things he wants to do with the country, obviously on the front cover. And right. And so anyway, and then of course inside just details all of their scandals and ethical violations and corruption and incompetence and all this stuff. Well, I tasked our new social media manager, Brandon, who's doing a fantastic job, you may have noticed, with starting to collate the Liberal Party's scandals in the last 13 months, which is going to cause me, because this whole thing together is 5 pieces of paper, double-sided. It's going to cause me to add 3 more pieces of paper, which adds another 6 full 2-page spreads like this, just to cover it all. So we're redoing the whole brochure. It should be done in a couple of weeks. We're redoing our entire distribution infrastructure, and we're hoping to distribute 500,000 this time, maybe more. And should an election be called and I need some fundraising to be done, I need some help with that financially, I'll let you know. So you don't have to worry about it for now, but if we need it, I'll let you know. Because that, if I were to do that, that's going to cost probably $500,000 to do by the time it's all over. So I'll be asking for special help if I need it. So keep that in mind. So we're not going to wait till the last minute. We're going to be fully prepared and do it even better than we did it last time. Because we pulled that whole project together last time in like 3 weeks. So whenever we do something like this, it's great. People are like, oh, that was unbelievable. I'm like, could have been way better. So it's a gift and a curse, I think. But we've done it now. I know what we can do better. I know how we can make it more effective. And we're going to do that next time. So kind of interesting. As you guys may or may not know already, if you're watching the YouTube channel or Rumble channel or seeing us on Facebook or what have you, or TikTok, I made an appearance at the Mass Casualty Commission last week. And what that appearance was my opportunity to question Professor Joel Negin from the University of Sydney, who's partners with Professor Alpers, Peter Alpers, I believe his name is, who are these guys are the ones that are just like, oh, the Australian buyback after the Port Arthur shooting was an unmitigated success. No, nobody ever got killed again in Australia after we took all these guns away from licensed gun owners after this criminal shooting. So, and yes, I'm being a little bit facetious and hyperbolic there, but nonetheless, the Alpers had done this report and all of that material had been circulating around about the Australian experience. And that's one of the things that the Canadian government, the Liberals, have aspired to. They want the same system that Australia has and how they got there implemented here in Canada. And same thing with New Zealand, right? They want that here in Canada. They don't care about the data. They don't care about that firearms are important to the people that own them. They don't care about any of those things. Canadian culture, I don't care about any of that stuff. You don't get guns, flat out. That's what they think. You don't get any guns, and only we get guns. So anyway, the commission commissioned this report by these two professors, and it was presented by Joel Negin. And I had an opportunity to question him for 5 minutes. So in case you didn't see the video, I'm going to put the video in here because I'm going to give you an extremely edited version, a heavily edited version, just to make good use of your time. So if you haven't seen it, check it out right now.
Success, they see it as something that differentiates them from the American experience. When there is a mass casualty event in the US, there is often a flurry of commentary in Australia about, we're glad we don't have these types of events because of our policy settings.
Thank you so much for that very informative presentation, Dr. Negin. So I'm going to start with Mr. Rod Giltaka, who is in joining us from Vancouver today. And Mr. Giltaka, you have 5 minutes.
Thank you very much. 5 minutes is not a lot of time to discuss and vet this report. The report's lengthy and a lot of the data has been circulating around a lot of these communities for a long time. Many papers have been published on this material that are highly critical of it. I think the question that I would like to pose to Dr. Negin has to do with how all of his research applies to what happened in Nova Scotia. So just to be clear about all that stuff, we've had a real problem in this commission with parties coming in and standing on top of what happened to promote and to push their agendas for changing Canada for whatever their agenda is. And it's been a very difficult thing that I think the public largely rejects. But to be clear about what happened, so to set the stage for my question is, we had in Nova Scotia on April 18th and 19th, 2020, we had an individual with a decade or decades long history of bizarre and violent behavior. It's my understanding he even threatened the life of his parents. He's had several interactions with law enforcement throughout that entire period. So he was not flying under the radar. He was well known for these things. Didn't have a firearms license, didn't have any connection with the lawful firearms community. He smuggled firearms across the border from the United States. He dressed up as a police officer driving a police car and committed the largest spree shooting in Canadian history. So my question is being that the commission has spent millions upon millions of dollars to find out what happened in this circumstance, what in this report, what measures were implemented in Australia with the National Firearms Agreement would have prevented or mitigated this this shooting spree?
Process. Thank you, Mr. Kotaka, for the question. So first of all, I just want to be clear. Our brief was to write a report for the commission on the Australian experience. In terms of the relevance of the Australian experience for Nova Scotia specifically or for Canada more broadly, that was not what we were asked to do. But we were not asked to look at it specifically in the context of the events in Nova Scotia in 2020. So I take your point that the individual in question had a history and...
So it really, there's nothing in that report that would have mitigated or prevented what happened in Nova Scotia.
I'm not in a position to answer that question. I don't know enough of the details. I haven't been involved in the commission's work. So that's a question for the commission ultimately. That's not something I can say one way or the other.
So in fact, the report itself just contributes to a conversation. It creates a response to the opportunity presented by this, the worst spree shooting in Canadian history, to talk about gun control. That sounds like that's what's going on.
And Mr. Kotaka, Dr. Degan will respond, and then we'll move on to Mr. Zach.
Sure.
I can't comment. You're asking me to comment on motives of other people, and that's not mm-hmm. something I'm in a position to do. I wasn't involved in that.
Okay, thank you. And this was a commissioned report, so the commission paid for this. Is that correct?
Thank you, Mr. Kotaka. We'll move on to Mr. Zach.
All right. So that was interesting. Now, a lot of people like, as soon as you started getting in there, they cut you off. Baron, that's not what what the MCC was doing. Jamie Van Wart, that's not what he was doing. I only had 5 minutes to begin with, and we had gone over. Now, obviously, Joel Negin, instead of just answering my questions, was wandering around with his eyes twitching all over the place, going like, yeah, why am I here again? Trying to come, and he was kind of running the clock. But anyway, if there was anything sort of unfair with that, it might have been that, but it was not the commission's problem there. Although I think it's pretty obvious the commission should have had a reason to bring those guys in, not use that as an opportunity to roll out gun control. And I don't know if the commission themselves really realized that, because you really have to understand this issue quite intimately to know that what they did was probably inappropriate. But nonetheless, I always like to think that people are good before I have a reason to believe that they're biased and are doing something inappropriate. But anyway, I only had 5 minutes, but I think I got the point across, I'm hoping. So when it comes to showing up at everything we possibly can to tell our side of the story, or even just to hold people account for, you know, basic ethics, the CCFR shows up every time. And I did a lot. I didn't know, you know, let me give you some inside information. I know I'm going on a little bit, but one of the gaps in my knowledge this whole time for the last 7 years that I've been doing this is the Australian thing, right? This Australian model and the buyback and all that stuff. It's the one thing that I've always asked other people for help on. And I've never really had to sit down and dig through all the material and understand fully myself to the point where I could actually debate one of these professors one-on-one. So I was like, wow, man, if a debate breaks out, I better be prepared for it. So I just immersed myself 2 full days of studying what went on in Australia, looking at rebuttals by other people, looking at rebuttals by other academics. And there's a lot. There's a lot of papers that were published specifically to refute the claims made by these two guys, even in Australian universities. There are doctors doing that and professors doing that, and including in Canada. So I got a lot of help from Caitlin Langman and others, and I really appreciate it. I read everything I possibly could. And yeah, you know what? I'll tell you, the Australian story makes no sense for the mass casualty event that happened in 2020 in Nova Scotia. And number two, their findings are not what they say they are at all. There's been mass shootings, I think 9 mass shootings in Australia since then. They just didn't break that 5-person excluding the perpetrator threshold to be considered mass shootings, although one did in 2018, and Joel Negin didn't mention that. He said none. So it just, There's a lot more, but anyway, just it's interesting. So when people say the Australian thing is not what they say it is, they're right. I've checked it myself, not just because I always imagine that people are biased. So kind of interesting. All right, last thing I'm going to say, just kind of a funny thing. People have asked me on my notes when they see all this stuff on the back, like, what's going on? Like, are these my notes for the podcast? Which is pretty funny. And it's like, no, what this is I have to print a lot of paper, whether it's full studies or affidavits, which are literally 200 pages long. And I need those to sign documents and whatnot, or contracts and whatnot. And once those things are done, I don't need all that paper anymore. And I recycle because I'm an environmentalist, a real one. So actually I just make my notes on the back of all this paper, recycle it when I'm done with them. And then I shred them and put them in the recycle. So no, my show notes aren't as extensive or detailed as this. Anyway, it's kind of a fun thing. All right, I'm going to bring on Tracy Wilson, and we will find out everything else that happened over the last 2 weeks. It's crazy. All right, everybody, we've got Tracy Wilson from the CCFR on Skype. Wilson!
Kiltaka!
I was trying to yell it in the mic a couple times, and the mic just cuts off. It's got a kind of a high cut kind of filter or something on it, and it just ends up like, what? And then it's super quiet. So I'm trying to get this right.
Trying to do it quieter.
Yeah.
It's like the Auntie Wilson mic. We need a new one then.
Yeah, maybe there's a, I don't know. Where did I get this? Was there any Liberal Party people involved in sourcing this microphone? Man, these guys show up everywhere. Anyway. All right. So we've got a lot of stuff to cover. Why don't we start with the biggest news first and work our way down. Actually, it's all big news, but this is by far the biggest news. Pierre Poilievre is now the new leader of the Conservative Party of Canada.
I'm telling you, this was a walloping of a victory. Pierre Poilievre won the first round ballot with 68.2% of the vote. So almost 70% of Conservatives voted for Pierre Poilievre. Second place was Charest at 16.1, and then it goes down from there. Now, the interesting part about that is, aside from the percentages, if you look at the numbers, I remember during the campaign, Charest said he's the only one that could deliver in the GTA and in Quebec. So we looked at the ridings. There's only 8 ridings that Pierre Poilievre did not win, because of course it was broken down 100 points per riding for the candidate that won that riding. And Pierre won all of them except 8. 2 were in Ontario and 6 were in Quebec. So everything else, all 338 ridings, Pierre won them. So 330 ridings. So it's just an interesting walloping. And I flew back from TACOM. I was there in person at the Shaw Center in downtown Ottawa to experience it. The air was electric. The streets were on fire. Like, it was just an incredible evening. And so different from the last leadership races, because the celebratory feeling echoed all the way out into Wellington Street. We went 3 blocks away from the Shaw Center to find a patio where we could have something to eat afterwards, because there's no chance of getting in the celebration party. It was packed with thousands of people. And the patios of every bar and restaurant in the downtown core was also packed with Pierre Poilievre fans. So yeah, people honking their car horns, getting out of their cars, hugging each other, passing out signs. It was just mayhem. It was great.
All of that with the mainstream media trying to undermine him the entire time that he ran. Isn't that interesting, right? I mean, that win is bigger even than it was in reality, because, you know, this was an against all odds thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's funny, I reshared a tweet by former NDP leader Tom Mulcair, and he, you know, he had made a tweet some months back saying this thing is in the bag for Jean Charest. Yeah. He's going to take it. Pierre Poilievre has no hope. And it's like, here we have the most walloping victory in history of leadership races at almost 70%. So, yeah.
It was a whooping.
People have spoken.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it would be very interesting to know what the popular vote was, but you know, whatever, it doesn't matter now. But yeah, I think it's good news for conservatives. The conservatives are united. A lot of people join the Conservative Party to vote, and you know, it's not on our list of stuff to talk about, but interestingly, there was obviously this rumor of people joining the Conservative Party to vote against Pierre Poilievre, right? And I mean, imagine all of these efforts. You got the whole legacy media lined up against him, you know, just running bad PR nonstop, 24/7 the whole way. And then you have these organized groups apparently buying Conservative Party memberships to vote against Pierre Poilievre. And I think we could all agree, again, we're just assuming, and vote for Jean Charest and look at the results as it is. It was probably far larger of a victory than we even know. I don't know, just throwing that out there. Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of evidence of that, you know, liberal people buying a $15 membership just to try and skew the results. There's a lot of evidence on that on Twitter. They tweeted about it. I followed one thread where they were detailing everybody doing that, and it was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. Now, that's just one thread that I read, so I don't know. But,
well,
yeah, anyways, all to no avail, because we have a very decisive decision by conservatives across the country.
Well, in the immortal words of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, thank you for your donation.
So good.
He's never been quoted as saying anything good, like any of his lasting quotes. They're always negative stuff. Anyway, hopefully that's the way he'll be remembered in political history. All right, let's move on.
Okay.
We have a lot to talk about TACCOM this year. It's funny, and just to kind of preface it, I remember I was talking to someone and I said, oh yeah, you know, at the first TACCOM, and it's like the TACCOM that we refer to as the first one actually wasn't the first one. There was an experimental TACCOM over at Firearms Outlet Canada in the range area, which was a lot of fun. And then the following year, or maybe a year and a half, I can't remember, but Fred Pellegrino did the real first TACCOM, which was spectacular. And it was, it was attended. It was massively attended. It was done absolutely flawlessly. It was really, really great. And then the pandemic hit 3 years later. We've now reset to the first TACCOM again, post pandemic. And it was so busy. It was incredible. Like we could talk about stories of last weekend for a long time. But anyway, what are your insights to bring to the conversation?
Well, first of all, I'm going to tease you because you showed me and you wore the skin right off your hand from shaking hands with people, literally thousands and thousands of people shaking our hands, thanking us for everything we do, coming and supporting us. You and I both did a couple different talks up on the stage, which were really well attended. And, you know, I got up there and promoted National Range Day, which, of course, is super important. But for me, it was just so incredible. You know, this community has taken such a beating the last couple of years between the pandemic and the liberals, which feel about the same. It just, you know, it's just so encouraging to see everybody come out, because no matter how hard they try and stomp out the flame that is our community and our sport and our passion, they can't. We're unstoppable. So it was wonderful to get out and just see everybody and see real faces and shake hands and hugs and pictures. And yeah, it was great.
For sure. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. And I actually literally had a handshaking injury. The skin here from people grabbing my hand, the skin here was tearing, actually. And that was, you know, just in the beginning of Sunday morning, I was like, oh, that hurts, you know, because people are squeezing my hand. And I still have a mark here from that. And there was a mark over top. You know, oh, I got a handshaking injury. Boo-hoo. But the whole point
is, we'll get you some tactical gloves for next year. You can really.
Yeah, exactly. Wear gloves. People are like, yeah, I met Rod. I think he might be a germaphobe. It was so incredibly busy and so many people appreciating the work of the CCFR, which I really appreciate. But, I think one of the reasons I brought it up is, and this is just a suggestion. If you come to a show where the CCFR is being represented and there are people working the booth, you know, chances are Tracy and I won't be there, but thank them, because those are the people that actually make those shows happen. I didn't lift a finger for TACCOM other than to show up and take a whole bunch of credit. But it's not me, you know, like, yeah, I do some projects and I do some leadership and I do some public speaking, like, but that's it. We would not have had TACCOM, and especially not the way it was, without our volunteers. So why don't you mention who they were? Because they deserve some recognition. They deserve a lot of recognition.
They really do. So we had a huge team for TACCOM. I'm going to name them off so they feel recognized, because they deserve it. Greg Weiss, Terry Muxlow, Colin Saunders, Mark LaFond, Becky English, Jason Sterling, Anna McIntosh, Peter Dogum, Stacey Cartmell, Doug Johnson, Sean Kenny. And then I want to give a very special thank you to Jennifer Hodge from Edmonton and Mike Hynek from Lloydminster. That's right. They literally traveled across the country. Everybody who volunteered traveled from wherever they were coming from, even if it was across the country, to come on their own dime, give up their weekend to come and do this, work for free, volunteer for the CCFR, pay all their own expenses, their hotels, everything. I cannot even describe in actual words how much I admire these people. And every time someone says to me, thank you for all you're doing, I don't take it as a personal thank you. I take it as a thank you for everybody that stands beside you and I in this fight. So thank you.
Yeah. All that. These people did all that for free.
For free.
Yeah. For
it cost them money.
Yeah. Yeah. For trying to save their guns. And
yeah.
it's such an incredible honor to be part of, or even a leadership position of, an organization that people feel that way about. And so it is a privilege to help. And I want to echo what you said too. And I know we're taking a little bit of time on this, but it's important. You know, people come to the booth, they line up. Like, there was literally anywhere from 3 to 15, 20 people almost at all times for 3 days straight lining up to take pictures with us and shake our hands and tell us thank you and thank you for all you do and all that stuff. And I get really tired of saying the same thing over and over again, but whatever, it's no big deal. I keep telling people, it's like, thank you, because I'm a nobody out in the mountains of southwestern British Columbia with a video camera and an internet connection. And I'm like, I'm nothing without the CCFR standing behind me. And the same goes for you. Like, right. Nobody yeah. would take me seriously if they didn't see this huge giant standing behind me, which is the CCFR, which was built by all our volunteers and all the people that buy a membership or donate or contribute to the CCFR in some manner behind me, giving me that power. And so when I tell people, you know, they say, thank you for all you do, I'm like, it's a privilege. Like, I'm privileged to be in this position to fight on your behalf, because, you know, I'm nothing without all of these people. And it's just, yeah, people think it's like, oh, Rod's saying that because he knows what to say. It's like, no, I'm saying that because it's demonstrably true. So yes, anyway, I don't want it to ever be wasted on anybody or anyone to miss it, how important that our volunteers, our field officers, and our supporters are. I mean, they are 98% of the CCFR, and I get to do the fun stuff. And, you know, I won't speak for you, but, you know, I get to get all this attention and do the fun things. And it's just a privilege and an honor to do that for our people.
100%. I'm with you.
All right, let's move on. Okay, so we had a couple of speaking slots as well.
Yeah, that's right. So I think you got up a couple of times with a where do we go from here talk. I got up and promoted National Range Day, which to me is incredibly important. I think it's one of the main keys to this long-term fight. And then I did a women in the industry panel. So girls from all different corners of the industry in the firearms community. And yeah, it was kind of a privilege for me too to be able to be the host of that and talk to these incredible women and give some support to their companies and their different projects they're working on. And yeah, it was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. It was a really great weekend. It was the first flight I took since the beginning of the pandemic too.
By the way, that's right, eh?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was interesting. Somebody told me, actually, I think two people told me that we had the busiest booth of any booth.
Oh, yeah.
At the show.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't like to throw stuff like that around if it's, you know, marginally true.
No, but that's exactly what people said to me as well, is that it was just packed.
It really looked that way. So, and the booth looked great, too. It's you and the volunteers did a phenomenal job on the booth. It was really great.
Yeah.
Okay. You have a good team. Enough about TACOM. It was awesome. And Fred tells me that it is 100% on next year. And
yeah, September 8th through the 10th. It's already booked, so save the date.
Yeah, and he said if we're successful this year in getting some of our stuff back, it'll be as big as it was the previous year. So let's look forward to doing that. All right, next, we still have two more things to talk about. We've been at it 13 minutes here. It's really going along. Our friend Wendy Suk here and the Coalition for Gun Control have had a little setback in their agenda for Canadians.
Oh, just a wee little problem for the good doctor.
just a bump on the road.
So for those of you that know, Wendy Sukier is the president of the Coalition for Gun Control. She is the matriarch of the anti-gun agenda. And she had applied to intervene in support of the Liberal government in the fight against the gun ban, which means she wanted to provide evidence and support to say, oh, yes, we should be banning these guns. In fact, she'd like a lot more banned. And she had to apply to the courts to be an intervener on this case, since it was between us and the government. Well, it's funny because you guys got, well, not you personally, but the legal teams got to cross-examine her. And that was a really interesting read. You can find that in the documents section on propertyjustice.ca. But at the end of the day, the judge has delivered a decision on whether Wendy Sukier should have anything to do with this court case or not. And it's a big fat thanks, but no thanks. So she is out. There's a great quote here from the judge's decision that I just have to read out loud because it's wonderful. The judge says, this is Associate Chief Justice Jocelyn Gagne. Not only will the coalition not be filing its own evidence, but Dr. Sukier admitted on cross-examination that she had not reviewed the numerous, the numerous affidavits and extensive documentary evidence filed by all parties in support of their respective positions. So Ian Runkle did a great video on this last night, actually. It turns out the doctor didn't bother to read any of the case. She did zero homework. In fact, she wanted to waltz into the federal court, use this as a pulpit for her and a platform for her and her ideas. And the judge said, no, thanks. One more interesting thing that happened about that, and I'd like to give a huge shout out to Christine Genereux. So she's on one of the cases. She's not a lawyer. She's self-represented. And she's been nailing it. I know she's taken some criticism, but I got to tell you, she did an amazing job. In fact, the judge mentioned some of her evidence from cross-examination in the decision, the part about Wendy not even bothering to read the documents. Wendy's legal team had also filed a motion on behalf of Wendy Sukier to strike, censor, and sanction Genereux for harassment against Wendy Sukier. And the judge threw that out too. So it was a massive, massive loss for Wendy Sukier. She got, she got tossed on all accounts. So beautifully done.
Well, all I have to say about that is lol. So that's my new response on Twitter. I use that about 90% of the time, just because I'm like, these people don't get any more of my time. I'm not going to, cause I used to think up of clever things to rebut and whatever. And I'm like, they get a lol. That's it. I'm just laughing at these people.
You know, and if I was maybe a more gracious person, I wouldn't be like swimming around in this, but I am just a little bit. So, yeah.
Well, some of us enjoy it a little more than others, I think.
Oh, it's just nice to have a little win. It's, you know, it's not the big battle for sure, but knowing that she's going to keep her mitts off this case is wonderful.
Yeah, no, it's great. And I'm glad they got it handed to them. At least, well, you know, it's nice to have a little mini win once in a while because the system is against us, obviously. So it's nice to see, fairness rear its head in Canada, at least on occasion.
It feels crazy.
Yeah, for sure. And again, we got one more thing. It turns out that the RCMP, who didn't have any record of the meeting in question where Brenda Luckey attempted to politically interfere and jeopardize the investigation at the mass casualty event in Nova Scotia. Turns out there was no record of that, but all of a sudden there was actually a recording of that meeting that would, vindicate all the other officers and civilians that were in that meeting, all of whom all have the same story against Brenda Luckey, but Brenda Luckey stands alone and like, oh, I don't remember it that way. I guess she experienced it differently. But apparently the recording's been, it now exists, but it did exist apparently, but now it's been deleted is the story, right?
Yeah. Yeah, color me shocked, right? Shocking. Amazing. Yeah, so for those of you not really familiar, right after the Nova Scotia shooting, there was a teleconference between RCMP Commissioner Brenda Luckey, people, boots on the ground, Chris Leather, Darren Campbell, Leah Scanlon, communications people from the RCMP. And of course, it's at that meeting where those infamous four pages of notes from Darren Campbell came out. Of course, they're the only surviving record of that meeting. Now, it turned out in evidence this week or last week at the Mass Casualty Commission that there was a recording, but you're right. It has somehow been deleted, shockingly.
Oops.
So.
Whoops.
Nothing to see here, folks. Just move along.
I have other meetings, just not that one.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I understand the victim's family's frustration at this process it's just,
Oh, yeah.
It's tough.
Mm-hmm. It's turning out to be a bit of a mess. But anyway,
yeah.
I don't want to say too much about it. But yeah, I talked about it in the intro a little bit. Anyway, all right. I think we've covered, there were other things that we could have covered in this section, because I had a few other things written down because I keep track of things, as you know, during that 2-week period between podcasts. So we have things to, but there's just not enough time to cover it all. It's again, one of those podcasts where it's just packed wall to wall. So anyway, we got to sign off for now. And yeah, thanks for the update.
All right. We'll see you soon.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode, episode 126 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Thanks, everyone, for watching. Please share this podcast. Let people know that they should be watching it, because there's a lot of stuff going on that affects your ability to own and use firearms. And the CCFR Radio Podcast is a really great place to get all that information where they don't actually have to read it or anything. And, of course, you can check it out on Spotify if you're driving. Just listen to it. Or here on YouTube, Rumble, and any other platform that you're watching where you can get a hold of it, Facebook too. Anyway, I just want to say thank you to everyone that came out to the booth at TACCOM and met us, and just thank you so much for all your support and all the volunteers and the people that donate and become members of the CCFR. Without you, we couldn't do any of this stuff. And it's not me saying the right thing. It's just so true, right? We would be nothing without you guys supporting us. So I really appreciate it. Okay, I've covered everything, at least for now. We will see you in a couple of weeks. Check us out on Wild TV as well. Thanks so much and take care.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.